Hello and welcome to Showing Up With Good Culture. If you don't know already, I'm Jordan Mitchell.
And I'm Liz McCouche.
Showing Up is a podcast with purpose where we speak to the change makers who are positively contributing to culture in their own way to impact the world around them.
In this episode, we speak to Jodie Carris, founder of Self Space, the first on-demand therapy service on the high street.
And with over 18 years' experience as a therapist, Jodie has fast become a leading voice advocating for accessible mental health support. She is a co-author of How to Grow Through What You Go Through, published by Penguin in 2022, and regularly contributes to panel talks, podcasts, and media titles.
Jodie started her career in TV and later continued her academic studies to train as a drama therapist. In 2018, she founded Self Space, a response to the growing need for accessible, quality mental health support. Self Space now has two outlets in London and one in Manchester, with virtual sessions also available.
Self Space's mission is to positively change the culture around mental health by actively supporting committed individuals and companies to reach their full potential.
Jodie, we are so delighted to have you on the pod. We are huge fans of everything you're doing to democratize mental health support and destigmatize therapy in general. So we start every pod with the same question. What does showing up mean to you, Jodie Carris?
Wow, that was such a lovely intro. Can you guys come to all of my meetings for me and just do that? That would be amazing. Thank you for having me. It's a real privilege to share space with you both. So thank you. Well, that's a great question. It's a very therapeutic question. What does showing up mean for me? There's something for me about authenticity and what does it mean to live in an authentic way. And I think I spent quite a lot of my early career showing up as what I thought everybody else thought I should be, or how I imagined I needed to present myself. And I think over the years, I've become much more able to show up much more authentically as myself. And when I don't, I really, really notice it. And even in my voice, I become kind of thinner, less firm, less grounded. And I think for me, there's something about how can I actually bring myself into the room. And so, showing up, I think, means that for me.
Jodie, thank you so much for sharing kind of what showing up means to you. And I think, you know, through the lens of Self Space, you've really revolutionized the way we can all approach sort of showing up for ourselves in terms of sort of day-to-day maintenance of our mental health. But I'd love to understand the journey that sort of led you to launching Self Space and pivot from your career in TV. So I'd love for you to just take us a bit back to the beginning and where that sort of mental health self-development journey really began.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I think, listen, there is culturally such a big pull towards us paying more attention to our mental health. And I think a few things kind of collided together for me at once. And one of them was just feeling really, really disconnected from my own career path, which was as a television presenter. I used to do wildlife. And I can remember thinking I'd worked so hard to get on the telly, but I felt so unhappy actually about where I was. So there was that. And then there was also a kind of demand for more voices in the mental health space. So I'd be asked to go to businesses and talk about mental health. But can you not talk about mental health? Don't say the word and don't talk about feelings. And I can remember thinking then something needs to be done in this space to bring us a little bit more forward. How can we kind of move out of the stigma here? So I think those two things together, they put me in a headspace of thinking, okay, is there something that I can do to move things on a bit?
Love that. I mean, there's nothing like the entertainment world to kind of actually, I mean, we work in that space and we represent a lot of people who, you know, work within the entertainment realm. And I think as an industry, it probably does trigger a lot of kind of questions around people's own mental health anyway, through constant sort of pressure and competition and that sort of environment. So I can see how some of that experience has probably sort of lent yourself well to then supporting people in their own sort of different journeys.
Yeah, definitely. I think I feel that what we do actually across Self Space is we have a real sort of sense that all of us as humans are messy. We're all completely imperfect. And I think rather than this sort of old-fashioned idea that the the therapist has all of the answers, is always sorted and doesn't bring their own self into the room. We sit in a bit of opposition to that, which is that we bring our life experience to the table. We understand, and we're a little bit more approachable in the way we think about therapy. And, you know, historically, I think therapists have been put on a bit of a pedestal, and the idea is that the clinician has all the answers, and we ultimately think, and I really believe we don't, we're just there to shine a bit of light for people and help them through. So I think the idea that most of our team, there's nearly 200 of them now, have past experiences in their own life, which really contribute to this idea of a kind of level playing field, which I think really helps.
For those people that don't know about self-space, just unpack self-space a little bit, because self-space now, like, so I met you 6 years ago, and it wasn't even in existence then. You were probably manifesting it and thinking about it. Now you've got two spaces in London, one in Manchester, the ability to connect with anyone virtually. You've got a book, you've got a podcast, you've got a bloody Ibiza residency, you've got merch. What the hell? But it's basically like you can walk off the street in your lunch hour and you can go and have a chat with someone really inexpensively and without any kind of appointment needed. It seems to be accessible to everyone. But just in your own words, tell us what self-space is and how you hope to sort of scale it by all these different, you know, franchises and brand partnerships.
Yeah, so I think you've done a great job of describing it there, actually, which is, you know, one of the things that we really wanted to do was to remove some of the barriers to accessing therapy. And for me, those things were, you know, huge long waiting lists, and the only place you could really get referred or that you trusted to get referred was at the doctors, and the doctors is where we go when we're sick. And I think there's something really entwined in that in terms of how we think about our mental health. And for us, we think about the idea that being in therapy not only helps you at crisis point, but also helps you reach your potential. So it doesn't need to be contaminated with this kind of idea that something's wrong with you. So we've got lovely spaces. We're just launching one as well in Soho, which feels like a major thing for the kind of state of where we're at when we think about our mental health. You can book on an app. You choose when you want to come. You choose who you want to see. You choose how regularly you want to come. And those were some of the barriers to conventional therapy, which really stopped people coming, which is, if I've got to be there at 6:30 every Thursday night, and if I'm not going to be there, I'm going to be charged. I think that puts a lot of people off, actually, and it feels quite, it takes away our autonomy. So we're really about that you are in charge of your own journey here, and we'll do our best to support you. And I think that really helps people and encourages them to come. The other thing is, I don't know about you, but I've been in therapy a lot of years, and so many kind of stigmatizing spaces that I've had to sit in with strict lighting and kind of clinical setting. And we've just got these beautiful places that I think really encourage people to feel proud of going as opposed to ashamed. So there was a kind of a few things that I think set us apart from how we're trying to change the shape of people and where they think about their own mental health and how they get support.
I love that kind of you've thought about everything, including the sort of environment and that kind of home from home. I know you've got sort of like vintage furniture and it's quite stylized. I think all of those things really do make such a difference, because people kind of look at those adjacencies and feel sort of, I guess, seen. But one of the things I thought when I was looking through the website that was quite interesting is sort of the different formats of therapy. So you do duos, and that doesn't necessarily need to be sort of relationship counselling, which I thought was quite interesting. So you kind of can have everyone from friends to co-founders, work colleagues. I'm really interested to understand a little bit more about those sorts of different dynamics, because actually I could bring a couple of my friends into therapy with me. I'm like, girl, honey.
I feel like this is an invitation to go to therapy with you.
Yes.
Liz, we're actually having couples co-founder therapy right now. That's actually why Jodie's here. So
I love that for us.
I like it. But I think it's that, isn't it? Look, there's an expectation that relationships should work, and we're a little bit more well-versed on our kind of more intimate relationships not working and maybe going to couples therapy. But when it comes to things like family, friendships, all the things you named, Jordan, that we're going to struggle with those at some point in our lives. And sometimes we really just don't know how to navigate it, or we don't know how to make good things better. And I think that there's something about the way we approach things at Self Space, which is I think that in the therapy room, we can do almost anything, honestly. I think sometimes you need a third party to kind of be involved in the conversation to bring you to the point that you need to get to. And we've had loads of success with different people coming in as couples. And I think it's the way we need to be moving, actually, which is we don't have all the resources all of the time inside of us to sort things out. And I think therapy is just a really good place for that. So you two, come down, test it out and report back.
We 100% will. So you wrote a book, which honestly, I think is one of the best titles I've ever seen. How to Grow Through What You Go Through. And you talk about mental maintenance for modern lives. Can you talk a little bit about what that means? What is mental maintenance?
It took us a long time to come up with that title. And we were just messing around with two words, which was, first of all, it wasn't how to grow through what you go through. It was just grow through what you go through. And there was something about that, which was, well, we can't all do that, actually. We sometimes need to understand how we can grow through it rather than just kind of living through it. So we got there in the end, and it was during the pandemic we wrote it. So it was fairly stressful, I'm not going to lie. But mental maintenance, I think, is, I think that, and I don't know about you two, but this idea that we shouldn't struggle is still really paramount. So there isn't a huge amount, and there hasn't been, I know, any when I was growing up, there wasn't a huge amount of language around the idea that struggle is really normal and here are the tools that you need to navigate it. And I think we're really down with how we look after our physical health, but when it comes to our mental health, the idea that you have to work at it to stay buoyant is still one that we don't really talk about enough. And I think, and I'm sure that you probably agree, that kind of daily practices around looking after our mental health aren't going to guarantee that we don't struggle, that we don't go through difficult times. But I think it gives us the power, and I don't want to say resilience, I much prefer the word buoyancy, but to get through those challenges. So I think it's about flexing our kind of emotional muscles in the same way we do our physical muscles, so that we know that we've got the resources when we really need them to get us through. And the idea that our good mental health is a given is one that often gets us locked into corners, I think, as people, which is, I'm so ashamed that I'm struggling, rather than what work can I do to get me to a point where I know that I might be able to survive this thing.
That's really powerful, kind of really putting a focus on the struggling, because I see this particularly with my daughter, who's 20 years old now, and everything is like a moment. It's almost as if this kind of younger generation coming through feel like if things are going wrong or if they don't feel good, it's like terrible. And I'm often finding myself trying to say, look, Jada, stop feeling anxious about, well, I'm probably saying the wrong thing, but it's like, stop feeling anxious about feeling anxious. It's okay to have different feelings. It's okay to have moments of stress, panic, fear, disappointment. You've got to kind of just move through the feelings and actually let yourself feel. And that kind of brings me on to sort of my next question on, do you think that there is sort of a rise in anxiety with sort of the younger generation, Or is it that simply we've just got more of the language to sort of articulate how we're feeling?
I think, listen, as human beings, we are defensive people. We build our lives to protect ourselves from pain. And some of those defense mechanisms are really healthy and some of them are not. And I think things like anxiety, things like drinking, things like substance misuse, they all serve to act as a way of stopping us feeling. Because feeling in itself is incredibly discombobulating sometimes. It's like it doesn't make sense. It's not rational. Sometimes we can feel completely at sea with it. And even with the most psychoeducation, you know, the mental health language, putting into words how we're actually feeling can be completely impossible. And I don't think feelings often live in words. So what I think generationally is, I think our young people have more language, more understanding. And I think as parents, we're more open to talking than perhaps the generations gone before. I think that we need to know that there's often a rush to a quick exit, which is certain, like things like self-diagnosis on the internet or labeling things like, oh, I'm an introvert, this is why I'm doing that. So we quickly come to the idea that this is what I am or this is what I do because we have the language around it. And what that does, I think, ultimately is it stops us exploring further the reasons why. So it's about how do we use the information to stay more curious about ourselves, which is, again, feeling anxious. Anxiety in itself is actually quite normal. It's what saved us from being hunted back in the day. It's the thing that kind of keeps us moving. But it's about how can I understand what my anxiety is trying to tell me rather than just, oh, I'm anxious.
So I've got a few friends that live in the States and they talk very openly about being in therapy. And I've got lots of friends who live in the UK that I know for sure it wouldn't even cross their mind. And yet they've probably been through major life trauma, like ill parents or ill friends or divorce or whatever. But you talk about caring for your mental health proactively before things get difficult. But how do we know when to ask for help? If you're just kind of breezing through your life and maybe there's been no major trauma yet, how do you know when to go to therapy so that it doesn't become this kind of absolute crisis point when you really, really, really need it?
There is a kind of misconception as well. Like, I actually think the most difficult time to be in therapy is when you're in the eye of the storm, because you're often then just putting out fires. You're not actually able to do the really deep work. So I guess the way, I don't think there's any kind of right or wrong time, actually. I think we all actually really love talking about ourselves and there shouldn't be any shame in that. And I think if we can think about therapy as just an hour to talk about yourself and celebrate yourself and challenge yourself, it doesn't really matter what we're facing. It's about the curiosity, being with another person who is able to call you out, is able to champion you, is able to show you things that you're not able to see in yourself. There doesn't really need to be a particular time for it. I think if we could afford it in the UK, we should all be in therapy once a week or once a month, because I think all it does really is it kind of gives us more foundations, more understanding about who we are and how we show up in the world, actually. And often at Self Space, I hear it a lot. You know, people will turn up to therapy and they'll be kind of embarrassed and they'll be like, well, I don't have like a really big trauma. And so this idea that they've got to have suffered some type of big trauma, and what does a big trauma even mean in order to justify taking up a bit of space for themselves? And I think we're quite ashamed about that in the UK. You know, like, we talk about being selfish as really being a negative thing. And I think actually sometimes we all need to be a bit more selfish.
Yeah, I definitely think kind of liking in therapy to going to the gym, because we've sort of moved away from that culture of kind of beach body. You've got to rush for an occasion, you know, oh, it's a wedding or it's a the summer season. And actually, it's just this always on sort of well-being and commitment to that self-development piece. I love, by the way, your deep and meaningful cards. I think they're so brilliant. And one of the prompts that I think will really resonate with our listeners, which I wanted to kind of put out there and get your sort of thoughts on, is who are we independent of our work identity? And I think that quite often in business, people really associate their sense of self with and sense of worth with how they're achieving at work. And I'd be really interested to sort of see how we can kind of separate the two and have that sort of sense of purpose without attaching it to anything external.
Yeah, I think it's a really good one, isn't it? It's, we're so outcome driven, aren't we? Which is, even when we're kind of children, like, we celebrate the thing that we won, or we celebrate the kind of output or the outcome as opposed to the process. And I think, you know, in terms of our work identity, we can often be so caught up in, you know, how much money are we earning or what output are we giving to the world, as opposed to what is this process that I'm engaged in and what can I kind of learn from it? How can I feel more about myself as opposed to the thing that I'm actually doing? I mean, look, I don't think it's realistic to say that we're not going to get highs and lows from our work, because it is such a huge part of most of our lives. And I think it's okay to know that. But also, how do we not take all of our validation from the thing it is that we do, as opposed to being the people that we are? And I wonder if the difference is between that. I don't know. Do you two find that you're quite wedded to the way work is and how that makes you feel?
I definitely was. I feel like actually when I had my third child, Jude, I sort of for the first time had maternity leave. So I had time off to just really kind of get a sense of who I was. And I felt it was really important that I had a sense of identity outside of my work. Whereas I think prior to that, without even realizing, it was part of who I am and who I was. But certainly now I definitely think that, you know, I can seek sort of value in how I show up for people, who I am as a friend, who I am as a daughter, who I am as a mom, but also who I am to myself, without it being linked to, you know, did we win a new client at work today, or, you know, have I got a pat on the back from someone?
Yeah, it's so hard, isn't it, how it's almost as if you said, you know, you have to stop doing the work piece in order to find that. And I think it's so intrinsically linked, isn't it, to how we find meaning in the world. You know, is how do I find meaning in the world, which isn't just kind of weighted on what I do for other people, particularly for women. It's about being in service to others. Often it still is, unfortunately. Or, you know, how I'm achieving and how I'm being validated by the wider world. And I think it's a really healthy thing to stop for a little bit and try and wonder about that and how it's serving you.
Jodie, part of your work is going into businesses and helping coach them on how they should be looking after their staff, giving their staff access. So I think what you're doing by way of going into bigger companies and saying, here, I'm going to give you a package that your staff and your team can access. Talk a little bit about that, because I think there'll be people listening who run businesses, large, small, medium, that go, that sounds brilliant. And actually my team deserve access. And I would love to facilitate being able to give them access to talk to someone. But talk about a little bit about the work you do with businesses. That'd be really interesting, I think.
In terms of businesses, we have over 150 corporate partners, which are often global companies. So we work with some amazing businesses. And we're quite particular about the businesses we work with, because what I'm really keen on is that we don't act as a sticking plaster to a bad culture. You know, if we go to meet businesses and we talk with them, and I really need to feel, and I know that our head of partnerships is the same, that actually the leaders within the company really do care about people. They care about making cultural change, and that we can do something really good within that business. So we offer one-to-one therapy. We also offer workshops, talks. We've got an amazing initiative at the moment called Mental Health Champions, which is kind of educating leaders within companies around, one, how to look after themselves, and two, how to share that expertise with the rest of their kind of department or their team. There is something that I do want to kind of caveat, though, which is I really don't believe that an employer is responsible for the good mental health of their people. And that might be counter to my kind of business model. But actually, I think we have to know as individuals that we are all responsible for our own mental health. How we look after ourselves and how we take care of ourselves is not our employer's job. But it really, really does help culture if you have people that care, not just about the work that needs to be done, but how you are, who you are, how you're doing. And I think that employers have a difficult job, because I think ultimately they do need the work to be done. You know, we can't get away from that. And I think we do need to really sit in ownership of that. But we can do so with kind of empathy and care and understanding of the people that are working for us. And I think that's something that I really, really believe in. And I think if companies can afford to do it, I think it's a really, really important for the way that people work, for the culture that is within the business, and just generally a sense of belonging.
So Jodie, with all of this stuff that you've been doing, this building an empire really, and in quite a sort of short amount of time, how do you look after yourself? Like, what do you do? Because I can imagine that your job, like lots of jobs, but particularly your job of listening and giving advice can be quite heavy, like the subject matters that you take on board. Like, how do you switch off at the end of the night? And yeah, just give us some tips.
Oh gosh, switching off, eh? I swear it's overrated, isn't it? No, I'm joking. I'm quite sort of, I don't know, I do find switching off quite difficult. I've got, like, I often have quite a lot of emotional tabs open, honestly. But I am very, I do take quite a lot out of what we wrote. Like, I think there are some really good, in our book, there are some really good principles to live by. And I'm quite routine orientated. And I know that actual proper self-care, and I don't know about you too, is not the really beautiful stuff. It's not the bubble bath and the glass of champagne, which is lovely. It's actually the really gritty, hard stuff, which might be dragging your ass to the gym, might be making sure you drink water, having the conversation you really don't want to have. All the stuff that's actually quite boring, that is the thing that I notice keeps me well. And if I don't do it, you know, if I notice I'm not a huge drinker, actually. But if I've had, like, maybe too much to drink, or I'm not eating well, or I haven't got enough sleep, or I'm avoiding talking to someone, all of those things start to pull on my resources emotionally, and then I find everything a bit harder to deal with. So I think those kind of little things, I'm quite picky about how I spend my time and who I spend my time with. I've become much better at saying no to things that I know are going to deplete me, as opposed to kind of fill me up. And I've become a bit better at feeling more lonely, if that makes sense. Like, I think I used to kind of craft a life which meant that I was never on my own, or I was always busy. And I'm much more actively trying to take time to be alone or connect more meaningfully with people. And just everything in a moderation actually is something that I take quite seriously. Going to be like, I'm never inviting her to a dinner party, she's well boring. But honestly, I think, I don't know about you, but when something needs tending to, I notice that it kind of hangs around for me. So I might think about that person, or they might be in my dream, or the situation might be in my dreams, but it's with me. And I know that the longer I leave it without tending to it, the more it impacts how I feel.
No, totally. I think that thing around sort of things lingering, I guess link it a bit to procrastination as well, where there's always that sort of that thing either on the list, you know, whether it's having to check in on that person, or it's that bit of rubbish admin that you don't want to do, but actually by not doing it, you're doing it in your head 10 times over anyway. So just do it the one time rather than living with it for like 2 weeks. This is me on both my pension, my life insurance, and also my home insurance. So there is a long list I've been living for quite some time. One thing I did want to ask, and I don't know if you can say or not, but are you sort of seeing kind of trends, themes, are the things that we're kind of talking about, worried about, thinking about, do they kind of change? So perhaps maybe after lockdown, was there sort of a kind of common thread that a lot of people were sort of struggling with? Maybe it might help some of the people listening here today. And if you've got any anecdotes to any of those trends and themes.
Listen, I think there was something really empowering about lockdown, and I know it was really difficult for a lot of us, but there was also something really, really healthy in it. And I think it showed us that we can survive anything, you know, and I'm not, obviously everyone's situation was different, but ultimately there was something about, if I can cope with everything I've relied on as a defense or as a support without those things, I can pretty much know that I can do anything. And I think we saw, as we came out of that kind of COVID period, a lot of people leaving jobs, a lot of people leaving relationships, a lot of people moving countries, making changes that they hadn't been able to face before, because somewhere deep down we had an experience that, oh right, okay, I can do these, I can do hard things. And so I think there was a kind of a sort of rush to that. Also, I think we're seeing the flip side of that, which is we came out kind of like, you know, racehorses in the stalls, wanting to get out and back into the world. And I think we're seeing quite a lot of burnout now. I think we're all trying to live into the corners of our lives a lot, which is an amazing thing. But it also puts a huge amount of kind of pressure on us somewhere. And I think that people are feeling a bit more fatigued. So I think that's kind of I'm noticing quite a lot of that, quite a lot of burnout. There's also a real shift, I think, in the way people are engaging in kind of more romantic relationships with that we were talking about Bumble before. But, you know, there's become something a bit devaluing, I think, in the way that we understand human connection and how we make people matter in our lives. I think in the way technology is being used, which I think is amazing in a lot of ways, it also makes us believe that people are also more disposable. And I think we've got to counter that with ways of finding more meaningful connection, which is why we made the Deeper Meaningful game, actually, because I think we're really hungry for that. I really think we're hungry for more meaning and more meaningful connection just because of the way the world is a bit at the moment. I also think the cost of living is enormously impacting on our mental health. I think it's really, really tough right now. And I think emotional health is so dependent on how stable we feel financially. And I think it's really, really, the world is incredibly expensive at the moment.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of themes there, and interesting when you kind of talk about the disposable nature of relationships, because I think a lot of friendships also broke down after lockdown. I saw a lot of articles talking about sort of people, you know, sacking off their pals. So I definitely think that that's got something to do with it, or just that edit piece around just having people around you that make you feel good.
Yeah, and I think it gave us the courage to kind of leave relationships that maybe weren't serving us that well. But I think, you know, we were talking a bit before about kind of quick exits. And I wonder if there's something about how can we not just make really rash decisions about let's just leave. And of course, leaving friendships, leaving relationships is really healthy. But I think the whole thing that we can get to from that is, what can I learn about myself here? How can I do the hard thing, which might be having a difficult conversation, might be navigating it rather than just quickly leaving. So I think it's also about us looking at repeating patterns and doing things differently than we might have done in the past.
And Jodie, who do you look to for advice and inspiration? Are there people that you follow on Instagram, or who's in your dream dinner party, or who would your dream guest be on your podcast?
I try not to get too attached to other voices, particularly in the mental health space. Like, I really love the work of some people, and I notice that I'm like, okay, that really resonates with me, but I tend not to get too attached to that type of stuff, honestly. I've got a supervisor, and I really look to him for support with my clinical work. I know that you two have from what I can see, have a really lovely relationship, and I have a really good relationship with my business partner, Chance, and he's someone that I value his input in a lot of areas of my life and sort of really trust him. So there are kind of, and friends, I've got quite a small group of friends, but they're friends that I really feel connected to and that I can really go to. And then I also have a really good relationship with my ex-husband, which feels really important. It was different from my own childhood, and it's kind of one that I really value, actually. And so different people for different things, but I tend to keep my network quite small, actually. But yeah, I sort of take social media with a bit of pinch of salt, and I took Instagram off my phone a bit ago, actually, because I couldn't even work out what I was looking at. Just like mindless head filling. So, and that's made a massive difference, actually, not having it on my phone.
Actually, on that, I think that there's some interesting kind of takeaways there, because you sort of said, you know, taking Instagram off your phone has been a really good way of cleansing the mind. Are there any other little takeaway tidbits? Right, I'm going to try and divorce Instagram. I just don't know if we're ready to take it off the phone yet, but I'm going to try. Apparently there's apps to stop you going on
yeah, like a blocker.
I need to basically block myself. But are there any other little takeaway tidbits that we can all take away from this today?
Definitely. I mean, I know it's talked about a lot. Unfollowing accounts that don't make you feel good. I definitely would say don't follow exes and things like that. I don't think we need all of that. I think there's something about cleansing, really cleansing, and knowing how consciously you're using your apps and what you're using them for. Something that I think is really, really helpful is every morning when you wake up, just take a few minutes to sit on the side of the bed and ask yourself, how am I feeling? What am I feeling today? And just allow yourself to notice the things that you're feeling, and you can say them out loud. Like, I feel a bit jealous. I feel a bit lost. I feel a bit hopeless or happy or whatever the thing is. And then ask yourself, and what do I need? What do I need right now? And even if it's, I just need a bit more rest, or I need somebody to love me, or whatever the thing is, whether or not you can make it happen, pulling it into your conscious mind is a really, really healthy way to start the day. So that's something that it just literally take you a couple of minutes, and it's a really good way of kind of educating yourself around your emotions. The other thing, I think, without sounding kind of too woo-woo, is I think having like an empty notebook by your bed, which is just for your dreams, is a really important one. So even if it's just like once a week, when you wake up, you kind of write, even if it doesn't make any sense, like the feeling or what was it I noticed, because your dreams, not in a kind of this is what I translate it to be, but they are messages from your unconscious that are really powerful if you let them be.
My dreams are wild.
We need a minute on dreams. Okay. While Jodie's here, we need to maximize.
I mean, I feel like my dreams are really, really, really cinematic. Like Wes Anderson kind of, I'm sort of like really proud of my dreams. Like, I wake up thinking, fucking hell.
This isn't a dream off. It's not a show off on your dream.
But you know, when you're just like, I can't believe I had the capacity to dream that, the layers and the color and the texture. But what absolutely blows my mind is the cast. Like, it's always like a crazy cast. It's always people from now, like the last few days or whatever. But then there's like someone I went to school with that I genuinely haven't thought about, connected with, and they're just like randomly there. And then, I mean, I don't know whether I'm exhausted when I wake up because I'm like, that was a lot.
That's amazing though. But you know, Liz, that every single person in your dream is you.
Oh, really?
So every representation of what you see is some part of yourself.
No.
Yeah, way.
That's insane. That really changes things for me.
Totally. I'm sorry to say, like, you know, those hunks and all that stuff, that's really just you, ladies. I'm sorry. But yeah, wow. Somewhere deep down, it's something, it's about a version or an aspect of you in your unconscious that's not living consciously at that moment or whatever.
Blimey. Honestly, I think what you're building and what you've built is incredible, honestly incredible, and just has opened up a conversation for people that would never have even thought about therapy, needing therapy, asking for help. So I'm proud of you, mate.
Oh, Liz, that's so sweet. I appreciate that. And back at you too.
Well, I can't wait for our couple therapy session, Liz. I think it's going to be great.
You know, I'm actually going to record that.
Let's do it.
We're going to show it. We're going to expose it so that people can learn from it. No.
Thank you, Jodie. Yes,
thank you so much. Ah, Jodie. Yeah, she is amazing. I met her about 2 months or 3 months after I met Al, and loved her instantly, and have been so sort of proud watching her journey, really, and just how she is democratizing therapy and mental health. And I think it's to be applauded. I loved what she said about mental health champions in the workplace, almost like modern day first aiders, this idea that you could, you know, train yourself to be a mental health champion and then almost kind of, you know, tell somebody else in the workplace how to do that and just look out for your peers and your pals. I love that.
I agree, Liz. I mean, thank you for bringing her into our orbit, because I think special people like that are exactly what we all need. And it's so great that now everyone can have a bit of Jodie, or at least a bit of what she's created through Self Space, and have access to a listening ear. But also, I liked it when she was kind of like, yeah, we'll hold you to account and keep it real, which is so important. I think my biggest takeaway, which I'm going to literally do tomorrow, is waking up, asking myself how I'm feeling, and what I might need? I think that is just two really simple questions that you can ask yourself every day, but it just centers the thought and gives you some kind of, I guess it makes every action and everything that you do slightly more intentional, because you're really thinking about it through the lens of how I'm feeling and what do I need. So yeah, just a brilliant chat.
Okay, so Jodie's business Self Space, we will link to in the show notes. You can buy her book, How to Grow Through What You Go Through, that she wrote with Chance. You can, if you're lucky enough to be in Ibiza this summer, you can check out the Self Space residency there, and you can listen to her podcast, I'm Okay Though. Jodie very kindly has offered a special discount code for sessions at Self Space. We will link to that in the show notes as well. Thank you, Jodie. Until next week, my lovelies. Bye.
Bye.